Hey, welcome to the Accelerating Operational Performance Podcast. I'm Greg Schenkel, and today I'm joined in the studio. So nice to have a guest with me. It's Kirk Langford. Normally, Kirk, the guest is someone on a Zoom screen,
that's
so
right,
it's nice to
right.
actually be in person.
In the flesh, yeah,
and,
that's
and, you know, you brought up a good point, which is we're running this Rewind episode like we did at the end of last year, and it's 6 months into the current year, and so it is a good time to kind of take a pause. Usually people are kind of chilled out a little bit in the summer. And you also had a good take on like looking at the balance of the year right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you think about how quickly a year can go by, right? At the beginning of a year, 12 months, 365 days seems like such an enormous amount of time. And then next thing you know, you're halfway through the year. And often next thing you know, I don't know about everybody else listening, but I know for me, I get to December 31st sometimes and I go, holy moly, where did that year go? And so, you know, I like the idea of July as taking a moment to go, yeah, half the year is gone, which is maybe a bit hard to believe, but it still means we have 6 months to focus on, you know, what do we want to get out of the rest of this year? And so I think what's neat about doing this podcast kind of halfway through the year, this Rewind episode, is that we get a chance to think about, okay, well, we're in July, what do we want to get out of the rest of the year? And what would I, if I started it today, I'd probably be pretty far along in December, believe it or not, even though it's only a half a year. And yet also we get a chance to look back. Right. Which I think is good. See how far we've come.
And not everyone may have an opportunity to watch every episode. And so what we're going to do is little incremental improvements, which is what our goals are of all our both our podcasts. And we're going to look at a few guests that we selected. All of them were amazing, but we selected four guests and five different clips. And we're going to roll those clips and then talk a little bit about them. And the first one we're going to talk about is Megan Barter. And she is with, what is it, Kirk? You speak Portuguese.
Votorantim Cimentos North America.
Oh, very good. VCNA is what I say because it's a lot easier to pronounce. Megan had a number of gems in her interview that she did with me. And the first one she talked about is really being a career mentor or having a career mentor. And so let's view that clip.
Actually, very early on in my career, I had a manager who I still, to this day, look to as a mentor. And so, you know, this was one of my first jobs, actually, out of college. And so wasn't quite sure how to navigate the working world or the professional world yet. And he really took me under his wing and, you know, saw strengths in me that I didn't see at the time and really played on those strengths to help me grow. And it kind of led me into the path of HR as itself. And he sponsored me. He, you know, brought my name up in meetings where I wasn't in them. So he provided me the visibility and the support and just the confidence that I needed to get to that next level in my career.
All right. That whole thing was such a good episode to listen to. Megan's got such a good energy. But what I really liked about that clip she talks about is a couple things, right? One is she's talking about you want to have someone on your team that's speaking about you when you aren't in the room. Like, isn't that a powerful thing to think about? Who on your team, not on your team rather, but in your workplace right now is speaking about you positively when you're not in the room? And that's what a good mentor can do for you, right? They're bringing you up in conversations that, like she says, you wouldn't have otherwise really even known were happening or had a way to get into.
And she's really referring to, you know, if there's a management meeting going on and they're talking about who do you think would be suitable for this or, you know, what should we do about this? Somebody actually brings up your name as a candidate. Yes. And, you know, they always talk about like from a personal brand, just like a brand for a company. It's what people say about you when you're not around.
So I almost
think of having a mentor as someone who is going to be promoting you
your personal
in meetings
brand.
That you can't attend.
Yeah.
And they're speaking highly of you.
Yeah. And I think what's neat about this as well is she does mention that it was someone really early on in her career, and yet this person has sort of stuck in her mind and you know made a big impression in her. I think a lot of times when we're working with frontline employees or people that are relatively new, I don't think that frontline supervisors understand maybe the impact that they have because they might think to themselves, I'm not the CEO, I'm not the VP, what kind of decision-making power do I have? And yet you can have such a positive impact on a person, you know, even in the role of supervisor, senior supervisor, whatever it might be. So never underestimate that impact you have as a leader.
Right. I always think you'll be memorable for, well, you may not be memorable. There's a lot of people just aren't memorable. You could be memorable because you're such a great leader, really impactful leader. You could be memorable because you're such a bad leader. And I think you don't want either one, you want the one that's better. I would say, kind of like what you said, Kirk, is that we often think of when we've been mentored by somebody, but we don't always think about that we are in a position to mentor others. And so who in your team could you bring under your wing and basically speak well of them to give them an opportunity to succeed, right?
Yeah.
The second clip from Megan's interview was really one on busting silos. Of course, she called it the $1 million problem, which sounds great since she's a client of ours. but, you know, this idea of breaking down these silos between departments. Mm-hmm. So let's take a look at that clip.
Exposing individuals to what's happening in other areas of the business. And like I said, rotational programs are a really great way to embed somebody in a different area of the business. And it doesn't have to be just new grads that are rotating and then placed in a specific role after that rotational is done. We can have experienced rotational programs as well with leaders to learn other areas of the business. And when you break down those silos, you get more of that big picture.
Right. Okay, what a great clip. And I think what's neat about this is her idea of these rotations, right? So that it's getting the chance to see different tasks, different departments, different people, and not getting too stuck into your own role or your own job. I think that is such an awesome idea. And if every workplace could find a way to make that work, I know in some locations, I mean, we have lots of clients where it can be challenging to just hand over a job to somebody else or even to start training them on it, given the specifics of the location. But I think anytime a team member can learn a little bit about what someone else is doing and how they do it and why it's done that way, it's going to really break down any silos that you're dealing with.
Yeah, it definitely takes it from being us and them to just us.
Yes.
Like it is just us because there's only one check that matters. It's the one the customer writes or the funds that get transferred after a successful sale is basically who pays everybody. So all this infighting and silos is really, really not productive.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you highlighted it, which is we normally think of that as just an orientation thing, but to actually put seasoned people in. It did remind me of a principle of continuous improvement or lean. The term is Gemba. Mm-hmm. You usually will hear it in the context of Gemba walks. But Gemba means the real place or to go where it actually is happening. And it's really about, you know, as leaders, let's make sure that we go and see and be present where the value is being created. Yeah. And I think having other people go and see that.
Yeah.
We have a little activity that we'll run for some of our clients called Walk a Mile in My Shoes.
Yeah.
Which is sort of, I guess, instead of physically going there, we just have them pretend that they're in these different roles. And that even seems to break down the silos.
Yeah, I mean, it really does. I think what it creates is a little bit of a sense of empathy, right? It creates this sense of, I can understand that people aren't out to get me. They're not out to make my day harder by doing their job and trying to do things a certain way that might not make sense to me. It's, oh, they're trying to solve their own problems. They're trying to make their job a little bit easier. And we're all trying to do that. And sometimes that can create a little bit of tension, rather. Yeah. And I think that's what leads us to our kind of siloing that happens, right?
So I think that the silos is really just something every leader needs to be aware of, whether you're contributing to them or knocking them down. And I thought Megan had a great way of a great strategy for doing that.
Absolutely, yeah. So if we move on to our next episode, we're going to leave Megan, even though it was a great episode. And for those of you that might be listening, I really recommend you check it out. Megan's really good to listen to and just has a ton of wisdom to share. So someone else though with a lot of wisdom was Dr. Gwen Acton that we had on the show as well. And she had a really interesting comment about the idea that bad bosses tend to breed bad bosses. So let's roll that clip.
The way I think about it is the blind leading the blind.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that's all you know, then that's all, you know, that's many folks, that's all they've seen is bad leadership examples. And that's how they've been trained. And like you said, they don't understand the impact it might have.
Yeah, you know what struck me is, again, it's really a relatively short clip, but she's really talking about that we tend to model what we've seen. Mm-hmm. And I always think, I usually will talk about the analogy of like parenting is kind of like managing.
Yeah.
If you've had good parents, you want to be just like them. If you've had, you know, a difficult relationship with your parents, you want to be maybe different when they were. Mm-hmm. Same with leadership. If I've only seen leaders exhibit these negative behaviors, then I'm going to tend to propagate them again. I'm going to do them over and over again. So I don't know whether I think the thing she's really bringing out is if they haven't had any training or they don't have any self-awareness, they're just not going to be able to choose a different path.
Yeah. I think you bring up an interesting point because you said, you know, if you had maybe not such great parents or not such great manager, you might say to yourself, I want to do things differently. I'm not going to be like them. But without the ability to learn how to do it differently. How do you just inherently go, I'm going to do it differently, here's how? That takes some self-awareness, like you said, and then maybe some curiosity and some willingness to learn. Because otherwise, you might catch yourself. I think a lot of people do this. They wake up one day and they go, oh my God, I'm my dad.
Yeah,
you know, and you just think, how like did that them. Happen? I didn't say that. I was going to stop that from happening. But like you said, unless you're very proactively self-aware and curious to learn different ways, you will fall into the same trap. Because how can you just do something differently if you have no idea where to even start? And yeah. I think that's exactly what happens here. So I think like we talk about a lot, they seem like such simple things when it comes to leadership, but a little bit of self-awareness and a little bit of curiosity can go a long, long way to breaking this exact cycle that Gwen talks about.
Yeah. And you know, in our class, we'll sometimes ask the question, are leaders born or made? Mm-hmm. And inevitably, mm-hmm. although some people say you're born, you are given certain characteristics mm-hmm. perhaps or qualities. But it's really how you get shaped over time. And I think you make an excellent point that if all I have to go on is this frame of someone I don't really want to be like, but that's the only thing I've seen, I'm going to probably copy it even if I don't really want to.
Yeah, and I think we see it a lot with more autocratic leaders, right? We tend to see that if that's what you've had as an experience, you know, they might not be the friendliest, warmest people that you really want to work for, but one thing they probably do achieve pretty well, because authoritarian leaders or autocratic leaders, pardon me, tend to do this, is they get the results.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you need to get the results. And so if that's all you're seeing, you might go, well, I don't treat people very well, my team doesn't love me, but hey, I get the results. Yeah. So you don't necessarily, you might turn a blind eye.
So there's a positive feedback loop almost when you're doing
You might
that.
Turn a blind eye to high turnover or other negative sides because you're going, well, at least I'm getting the work done.
And Dr. Gwen Atkin, she basically does very similar work that we do with frontline leaders. But her claim to fame is the scientific and technical leaders.
Yes.
And she just had this great book that she launched, which was why she was a guest on the podcast. So check out Gwen's topic. Our next episode that we wanted to highlight is with Kirby Griffin. And I've known Kirby for probably, gosh, it must be 15 years now, maybe more. He and I did a project together at the company that he works for and with. And what I liked about Kirby's clip, and he'll get into it, is just having the right frame of reference as to how action-oriented you should be. So let's roll that clip.
Throw stuff up against the wall to see what will stick. Figure out what is right, and then go forward with it. Yeah. So I think that is the biggest challenge that an organization can have is that, you know, the your boss, your manager, the plant manager, the people at corporate want this solved immediately, right. Want this fixed, want to keep, you know, keep things running. And sometimes it's not that simple. Sometimes you have to slow down to go back.
So I love what he says at the end, right? Sometimes you have to go slow in order to go fast. And I think that obviously sounds like one of those adages that's like, oh, very wise. But I do think there's wisdom in that, right? This idea of just always charging ahead, always insisting on constant action, no matter what the consequences. I do think sometimes slowing down, assessing the situation, asking people around you, what do you think we should do? Taking that beat to just assess the situation can be really important to move more smoothly forward.
Yeah, otherwise you end up, I mean, no change is really super smooth. It's always going to be a bit of ups and downs and tweaking.
Of course.
But I think the action bias, which again, we're saying leaders need to be action biased. We just think that if you blindly go forward at full speed on solutions that aren't going to work, you're just going to create more need to keep tweaking and adjusting and waste a lot more time and money and energy on it, right?
Yeah.
I'm also mindful of, we do an activity in our course, which is problem solving and decision making oriented. And, you know, supervisors themselves are so conditioned to be action oriented. They just want to get moving.
Yeah.
And sometimes the best solution is actually to pause and, like you said, size it up, look at options and alternatives, look at the consequences of those options and alternatives so that you ultimately make the right or the best decision to do the right thing. Yeah. So I think it's difficult because I think we're all in the business of promising fast results.
Yes.
And maybe it's this immediate gratification that we also have a bias towards. And just in leadership, you just have to know when to... Yeah. You know, I always think of it being like a parent where I heard this great saying. It said, you know, if your kids are pestering you for something and you're like, well, I need this right now. I need to go right now. And you go, well, if you need my immediate answer, the answer is no. But if you give me some time, the answer might be yes.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Which is interesting because that just buys you a little time.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And I just think if you're as a leader, you just need to buy a little bit of time to just size up. Is this really only a one action strategy. Right. If everyone says it's a no-brainer, this is the only thing we should do, that itself should be a red flag to at least think about whether there's other options.
Well, I think that speaks as well to the, you know, when we do our leadership styles module in our training, right? One of the styles is a coach. And one of the things coaches do well, as you know, is not only do they build on positives and they clarify expectations, but they involve the team. Yeah. And I think sometimes there's this action bias, but there's also this, as the leader, I'm supposed to have a plan. I'm supposed to have a solution. And so, like you said, you spring into action, even if it's not maybe a well thought out resolution or answer to the question, because you're thinking, well, as a good leader, I should know what to do. Rather than, like you said, taking that beat, looking at your team and going, hey, I could use your input. I could use your help because I'm not really sure what the best thing to do is. So before I decide, can we work on this together? And I think there's a win-win there, isn't there? Because you've got the leader getting some advice and getting some input. You've got the team being asked for help, which I don't know many teams that go, oh, I hope my boss never asks for my opinion. I hope my boss never cares about what I think. Instead, it's like, yeah, we helped come to a solution together. Yeah. So I think it can, whether it's a change initiative, whether it's a conflict, whether it's just a machine's down and you need to get it back running, obviously, time is of the essence. No place wants you to just, you know, pack up shop because there's a problem. But I think taking that beat to just reassess is a really important piece.
You brought up change management, so I'll just add this piece as well that says that a lot of times there has been a pause while certain people like engineering and management have had multiple discussions about something. Mm-hmm. But when they release it to the production floor, it's like, surprise! Yeah. You know, here's this big change that's going to completely upend your existence. Yeah. And they don't realize that those people have not been engaged and involved in that discussion or even understand the reasons why.
Yeah, right. Yeah, agreed.
So that brings us to the next guest and our final
one.
Clip.
Yeah.
Is now this is Lauren Gerard. One of the things I love about hosting the Accelerating Operational Performance podcast, and I know Lauren came in and actually was sitting in the seat that you're in, is that he's somebody I haven't even talked to for 10 years, but I admired him. So it's interesting how memorable some people are from business dealings that I mean, he's been retired for almost 10 years, but he was so impactful when I did know him. Yeah. And really we selected what I think is the best clip from Lauren, even though it was a great episode, is like his comment about being with the people. So let's see the clip. People on the way out and thanking them for a good day's work. So again, that was just all part of your people first mindset. Right.
Yes. Okay. It was all that. It's exactly what it was. I wanted them to know that I wasn't in an ivory tower. Mm-hmm. And I'd worked in companies where that ivory tower was very obvious to me. And I didn't enjoy it as a, even as a senior manager in there.
It felt just, distant?
The distance and the non-accessibility. Mm-hmm.
So, Greg, I think we've come full circle because you mentioned that Lauren has been someone that you've kind of admired for a long time. And even though you haven't talked to him for a long time, you still got a great interview with him. You had a lot of good conversation. Well, isn't that what we heard from Megan Barter at the beginning, that she has that mentor from many years ago, 15, I think, years ago, that she's like, I still remember this person. I'm still in contact. So it really just goes to show that if you're that person that can inspire and you know, be a little bit inspirational, then even years later, people are going to remember that. But to Lauren's clip, that whole idea of a people-first mindset, I think, is so important because at the end of the day, I think the work will always be there. And I guess you could say, oh, there will always be people that I can hire. But the question is, if you're a leader, do you want to have a team that has relatively low turnover? You have time to develop trust and respect on the team. You have time to build a team of people that look up to you as a leader and that want to become leaders in their own right. Or do you want a team that's new every week? Because sure, you got the work done, but you drove people to madness getting it done. And so I think that people first mindset of remembering that's important. And the other thing I think about as a leader is it's not about getting the work done. It's about getting the work done through your team. Right. So just getting the work done isn't really enough as a leader. Your job description says, I'm going to leverage my team. I'm going to empower my team. And so I think he touches on this with this people first mindset. You got to think of the people getting the work done and not the work done. Okay, who do I make do the work?
Yeah. So one of the things I remember about dealing with Lauren as well is he's almost always insist on us meeting face to face, which again, it's rare these days.
Yeah.
I'd actually go to his office, even though the meeting wouldn't be that long. Mm-hmm. But he knew the power of relationships. And that actually brings up, you know, maybe ties into your point is that we're surrounded with technology and automation and data and information. It's so easy as a leader to just sit behind your desk looking at your screen and kind of trying to manage by the scoreboard.
Yeah.
And I know at least the clients that often will bring us leaders who need some coaching for being overly abrasive or not having good relations in their team. It's because the leader isn't with the team. And so if you're a leader and you're trying to do too much by staying separate from your team, just know your team wants you to be with them.
Yeah.
And so I took that away from Lauren. Yeah, it's just a good reminder, because I can easily fall behind in my computer and just get tied up in everything.
And I would even say not just, I mean, there's that issue of kind of isolating yourself to some degree, being behind the computer screen, but there's even the situation with a lot of our clients where, you know, our frontline supervisors we're working with, our frontline leaders, they're not behind a desk. They don't have their own office. They don't have their own desk. Yeah. And yet sometimes they still find or end up sort of isolating themselves because they're so worried about the work getting done that even though they're physically together, I'm running by you on the floor. I'm not really paying attention to you when you come in the morning, instead of, you know, hey, how was your weekend? It's, you got to get on that machine. Let's go. Yeah. So even though I'm physically present, I'm still kind of ignoring that you're a person right in front of me and I'm treating you just as a worker. And when you do that, you're also not doing a people first mindset. Right. So it's physically being there, but also I think mentally being there as well.
Well, you're actually even leading into one of our other like favorite topics from frontline leadership, which is the leadership trap.
Yeah.
Which is the only time people ever get any of my time and attention is when there's a problem to solve.
That's right.
Or a question I have to answer. And meanwhile, the other people are ignored.
Yeah.
And so making that time just to be with people builds up the relationships, builds up the trust.
Of course.
And of course, that relationship can deliver results. So I hope that you've enjoyed this look back at the Accelerating Operational Performance podcast. I liked going back and watching some of these clips. Even though I host the podcast, I often listen to them again, because when you're interviewing, you don't always, like, you're not always present
in the moment.
Answers.
You're just focused on asking the good questions. You're not necessarily able to really hear the answer and go, God, that's a nugget. That's a great little gold nugget there.
So I hope if you haven't been a subscriber that you will subscribe. And of course, how podcasts grow is you mention it to someone else or forward it to them on your phone. And of course, watch the future episodes. And like Kirk said, this is a great time at the middle of the year to kind of look ahead, make a small adjustment to your leadership approach, see how that drives better results going forward.
Absolutely.
And make yourself one of the leaders that we might talk about in the future as far as someone who is inspiring excellence. So for now, we'll just sign off and say thanks for watching our Rewind episode.
Thanks.